Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidavishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 58. Although Kamsa was always absorbed in thoughts of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not happy. A devotee, however, whether sitting on a throne or beneath a tree, is always happy. Srila Rupa Goswami resigned from office as a government minister to sit beneath a tree, yet he was happy. Tyaktva turnam asesha mandalapati shrenim sada tuchavat, said Goswami Astaka 4. He did not care for his comfortable position as a minister. He was happy even beneath a tree in Vrindavan, favorably serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee. For a non-devotee, the world is full of problems, whereas for a devotee, the entire world is full of happiness. Vishvam purnam shukayate vidhi mahendradish cha kirtayate yat karunya tataksha vaibhava vatam tam gauram eva stumaha. Chaitanya Chandamrita 95. This comfortable position of devotee can be established by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yasmin sito na dukena guru napi vichalyate. Bhagavad Gita 6:22. Even when a devotee is superficially put into great difficulty, he is never disturbed. Right? So that's the idea, is that by being Krishna conscious, one's not disturbed. The situation may or may not be nice, but he's not disturbed. That's the main thing that is gained. But Kamsa, even though he's thinking of Krishna because it was unfavorable, he was not happy. Right? Yes?
Then if a devotee is disturbed?
Then we need to be more Krishna conscious.
Easy solution.
Yes, it's a very easy solution. That's the whole idea, is that by being more Krishna conscious, then one is not disturbed by it. And here his prophets even say, superficially put into great difficulty. Superficially simply means the body. The situation is difficult. But they themselves won't be disturbed because they're always absorbed in Krishna. So it doesn't mean that Kamsa, that position, you can't get liberation. But while he's in the material world, it won't be a nice situation. You know, just like when he goes to the spiritual world, it won't be a nice situation because he'll just be liberated. But then remembering the Lord, who is transcendental, from now the liberated position, there's no bias in the way of you know, material desire. So then they can appreciate Krishna in his natural position. Then becoming attracted to him, taking on the positive, therefore their experience becomes positive. So for the devotees, because they're situated positively, then their experience is positive. But for the materialist, because they're situated negatively, right? Because it's about how they're going to control and enjoy, then they can never actually be happy. The materialist is never actually happy. There'll be their moments here and there, but that's moments. You know, if you take and go, okay, think back over your whole life, all the great moments. You know, if you could fit them into, you know, 5 seconds, you know, we'd be doing pretty good. You know, even, okay, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Get it, go for it. Have a whole minute, you know. So that's it. So would we consider that? You know, that's the whole thing. That's it. Verses 25 to 42, the prayers of the demigods. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada, Devala, and Vyas, and by other demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Varuna, invisibly approached the room of Devaki, where they all joined in offering their respectful obeisances and prayers to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can bestow all blessings upon everyone. Srila Prabhupada comments, Brahma is so powerful that he is in charge of creating an entire universe, yet he personally came to receive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhava, Lord Shiva, is always jubilant in chanting the holy name of the Lord, and what to speak of Narada. Yeah, so then when we say Bhava, Bhava means is Lord Shiva, or it's also his wife, Bhavani, right? But we see here it's talking about Lord Shiva's happiness in absorption in the holy name, right? So he's always, so that's the Bhava, so Bhavananda. So the Ananda of Bhava at performing devotional service, right? And what to speak of Narada. Narada Muni, Bajaya Vina Radhika Ramana Name. Narada Muni is always chanting the glories of the Lord, and his engagement is always to travel all over the universe, chanting the glories of the Lord. And his engagement is to travel all over the universe and find a devotee or make someone a devotee. Right? So he's always chanting the glories of the Lord. So he's always looking for someone who also is chanting, or by someone who would be interested in taking up the chanting process. Even a hunter was made a devotee by the grace of Narada. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Toshani says that the word Narada Adi Bihi means that Narada and the demigods were accompanied by other saintly persons like Shanaka and Sanatana, all of whom came to congratulate who came to congratulate or welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though Kamsa was planning to kill Devaki, he too awaited the arrival of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pratikshams taj janma. Right? So everybody's waiting for Krishna to appear. That's the whole thing. So even Kamsa is waiting. Right? Let alone the demigods are definitely waiting. The demigods prayed, O Lord, you never deviate from your vow, which is always perfect because whatever you decide is perfectly correct and cannot be stopped by anyone. Being present in the three phases of cosmic manifestation, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, you are the supreme truth. Indeed, unless one is completely truthful, one cannot achieve your favor, which therefore cannot be achieved by hypocrites. Right? So it has to be, when you see truthful, means it's always about trying to please the Lord, gaining, knowing the Lord. Right? Not that we're doing externally like we're trying to please the Lord, and then internally we have a different idea. It has to be that we actually want to. Now, how good we are at it, that's another thing. But we see is that, why is it that these great devotees? It's by the Lord's blessings. Right? By the mercy of this comfortable position of devotee can be established by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So it's by the mercy of the Lord, then that can be appreciated. Does that make sense? That's the... You are the active principle, the real truth, in all the ingredients of creation, and therefore you are known as Antayami, the inner force. So when we say truth, it has to mean in connection with Krishna. If it's not about Krishna, it's not actually real truth. It may be some facts according to how it's perceived in the material world, like that, but it doesn't actually mean it's truth. When it's connected to Krishna, at that time only it becomes actually truth. So then being truthful means always connecting things to Krishna. You are equal to everyone, and your instructions apply for everyone, for all time. Right? So this idea of what the Vedas say, because that's Krishna's instructions, they always apply. It's not that they apply today, and then they don't apply tomorrow. Because otherwise, sometimes the concept is theirs, oh, but that Shastras, they're old. All this process is old. But it's Krishna's process, so it always applies. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. But it always applies for humans. Means the Shastras describe how Krishna controls those below the human platform and those who are not God conscious, how they're controlled also by the modes of nature. But the point is that the Krishna's instructions apply at all times. And if you take it up, they'll always work. But if you don't take them up, they won't work. If one says, no, but I took them up, they didn't work, means then there needed to be more practice. Like that. We have to remember we're practiced so much at... It says that the common thought is that 10,000 hours of doing something, you become expert. Right? So that means then we, being in the material world and material consciousness, we put in more than 10,000 hours. We're experts. But devotional service, that's new. So then trying to make that balance. But Krishna consciousness is more powerful because it's natural for the living entity. So very quickly it can be accomplished. But the point is that it takes that practice. It's always applicable. It always works. You are the beginning of all truth. Therefore, offering our obeisances, we surrender unto you. Kindly give us your protection. Right? You are the beginning of all truth. So truth starts when we start to see Krishna in connection with it. That's when we actually understand it as truth. Footnote 19. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 26 to Bhagavad Arkaramichimala, chapter 18, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, The Glories of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Mahima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, oh no, there's more. Also in his Paramatma Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, the Srimad Bhagavatam verse is the purport of Satyam Param Dhimahi in Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Krishna is Satya, therefore it is to be understood that this world is Nashvara, perishable, and it changes its shape, although it is real. Right, so that's what we mean, it's real, but then there's really real. This non-existence of the material world is not non-existence after destruction. It is not complete non-existence. Because if it were complete, there would be no creation at all. Right? So we wouldn't be here to discuss it. The destruction of this material world is going from manifest to unmanifest. Because it has come from Sat, it will go back to Sat. As the potency of the Lord, this also has to exist. Right? So that's the principle. There always is something. If something doesn't exist, every object has four qualities. Right? It exists. It has particular, uniqueness. It has activities that it can be performed and results that it can be gained. So in other words, everything has a purpose. Right, but for that purpose to be there, that has to be exist, right? And so when you apply the existence with the qualities that it has, the uniqueness, then you get the particular use. Right?
What was this? Exist, uniqueness, the last one is purpose?
Purpose, the middle one is activity. Right, every object has something that it does. Right. So with these four, then you can understand the material world must exist. Because otherwise, if we're saying it doesn't exist, then what would be the philosophy based on something that doesn't exist? Right? If something doesn't exist, I can't make a philosophy on it because it doesn't exist. Right? Because if it doesn't exist, my philosophy also doesn't exist because it's based within the existence of the non-existence. So therefore, it's a waste of time. But this is the foundation of your your nirvishesha shunyavadi. Like that. So we can understand it's not actually a real philosophy. But, you know, it's popular. But people are absorbed in the non-existence, so therefore a non-existent philosophy would also be satisfying to such individuals. Does that make sense?
No.
Yes.
Why is this verse assigned to Prayojana?
Because then you're trying to attain that satyam param dhimahi. You're trying to attain that sat. So they're pointing that out. So we're trying to come to that platform of that. He is everything, right? In other words, you are the beginning of all truth. So what does that mean? You're trying to get to truth. Who's truth? Him. He's the param, you know, satyam param. He's the antaryami. He's what's inside. So getting into anything, it's him that's there. So he's what you're trying to obtain. Right? He's the source of the creation, maintenance, and destruction, right? Like that. And we can't achieve him unless one is truthful. So in other words, this aspect of truth, that's what attains the Lord. But that means truth connected to him, not at the atheistic morality. You know, but we just want the truth. We just want to know. That's not real. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Here can we say the mood of the prayers are like more personal to the personal aspect of the Lord, that you never deviate from your one.
Yes, you could say like that, because they're talking about the person and attaining the person.
How it's for Prayojana, because the similar prayers they offer before also, but it mostly goes into the Sambandha section.
Okay, yeah. Yes, I would say it's like that. So, in other words, we take it unless it uses like the word like prema or stuff like that, okay, it can't be in this section, because for us it's the words, not the content that it means. But here is that if it's all about Krishna, he's the beginning of everything. So for the devotees in Braj, Krishna is all there is. So he is the supreme truth. So they're only thinking about Krishna. They're not absorbed in anything else. This is where this comes from. The satyam param dhimahi comes from there. But you put it into this language and then it works. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments. Bhakti, devotional service, is the only way to understand the absolute truth. For protection, therefore, the demigods surrender to the supreme truth, not to the relative truth. There are persons who worship various demigods, but the supreme truth, Krishna declares in Bhagavad Gita 7:23, Antavat tu phalam tesham, tad bhavat yalpa medesham. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Worship of demigods may be useful for a limited time, but the world is antavat, perishable. This material world is impermanent. The demigods are impermanent, and the benedictions derived from the demigods are also impermanent. Whereas the living entity is eternal. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam. Katha Upanishad 2:2-13. Every living entity, therefore, must search for eternal happiness, not temporary happiness. The words satyam param dhimahi, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1:1, indicate that one should search for the absolute truth, not the relative truth. Right. So that's how it's fitting into Prayojana. Mm-hmm. Right? If neglected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a child, despite the presence of his parents, will suffer, and a diseased person, despite all medical help, will die. In the material world, where there is a struggle for existence, men have invented many means for protection, but these are useless if the Supreme Personality of Godhead rejects them. Therefore, the demigods purposely say, Satyatvakam tvam sharanam parpannaha. Real protection can be attained from you, O Lord, and therefore we surrender unto you. The Lord demands that one surrender unto him. Sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Bhagavad Gita 18:66. And he further states, Sakrid eva prapannoyas tavasmiti chayachate abhayam sarvada tasmai dadam yetad vratam mama. If one surrenders unto me sincerely, saying, My Lord, from this day I am fully surrendered unto you, I always give him protection. That is my vow. Ramayana, Yudhakanda, 18:33. Right, so this is the Lord saying, right? That means this is his vow, that if someone surrenders, then he takes care.
This is like in the context when Vibhishan comes to surrender, and there was a meeting that whether he has to accept him or not.
Oh, I see. Okay. So his point is that it's his vow, he has to accept. Yeah.
Some places Prabhupada says, like, uses this exact same, you know, if you surrender to Krishna, Krishna will take care. But it's in two different contexts. Like, some places, well, even if I was to ask you now, what does that mean? You'd say, oh, it's not materially, it's spiritually. So.
No, but the point is that it's not that he can't take care materially, but the point is what we were making before, is whether Krishna takes care spiritually, but now whether he takes care materially, that doesn't matter to the devotee. That's why we're putting the emphasis on the spiritual, because if we say Krishna's taking care, then why are all these bad things happening to me? But the point is, as you remember Krishna, it doesn't bother you.
But another place Prabhupada says, a devotee does not need to worry about his maintenance because Krishna will take care. So
Yeah. There's
two different contexts that the same thing is used.
Yeah, but the point is he'll take care how he likes. Like for the child, the parents will take care. Now, it's not necessarily according to how the child would like. You know, for the child, you know, every evening they have chocolate fondue, then, you know, they would probably think that that's a good program. You know? You know, French fries, pizza, and chocolate fondue, and then you stick the French fries in the chocolate. You know, it means you have a good time. But the parent will take care according to what's necessary. So that's what we're saying is we don't have to separately endeavor. We simply perform our duties.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever comes from that, that's what's there. The same duties that we perform, someone else performs, and they may get more. Someone else gets less.
Yeah, but there's a certain amount that each person needs. Like,
but that's what we're saying on one level, because the point is that's what we're, by our conditioning, we're used to.
Well, if you're feeling hungry, then that's not really conditioning.
Yes, but then you said you're paying rent. You can also find a place that the rent is less, then you have more for food. But then that means it's a little farther away. It's in some Bengali's little, you know, backyard and some funky little house there with a common toilet that you got to use with everybody, but you know it only costs you much less, and so therefore then you have food for money. You can also think, well, if I buy this fat rice, right, the Bengali fat rice, the sitta chow, and eat that, then that'll keep me going all day, and it's a lot cheaper. Like that, you know, I'm saying all the locals around here, fat rice, really thin dal like water. And a little ball of potato about that. It means one potato boiled. It means you put the thing in there. It means what you do is, here's the simple thing. You get the sitta chow, you take a little bit of dal, tie it up in a cloth. You only need a little bit, right? Tie it up in a cloth. When the water's boiling, you throw it in there, right? And then you throw in one potato. This is going by this. So it means this is by this preparation. You can't throw in a few more. It means that would be more advisable. But we're just showing how the locals are working. Yes. Yeah, that festival day, right? Sunday, right? You know, so that, and then when the rice is boiled, you take it all out, right? So the rice is there, it's boiled, the dal you take out, dump that out like that. And then you have that alu, you peel it. Like that, you know, refined here, right? You peel the potato, and then you mash the potato, and then you put your salt, you put lots of red chili powder, and you put mustard oil.
Definitely.
Now you understand why you only need one potato.
Definitely not used to that conditioning.
No, but I'm just saying, is they get by like that. How much would that cost you per week?
How much would it cost you in the future on health bills?
Because that's another thing. But the point is how much does the Western life cost you? The American lifestyle, they got everything. How does that cost? They're the fattest people in the world. Except the Samoans, yes. We have to give it to the Samoans. You know, you must recognize, you know, how you say greatness where it's applies, right? So the whole point is we say, because we say this is what it is. And we say, well, the internet says. But after 5 years, the internet will say, what was great, that's bad for you. Like spirulina, right? It's supposed to be like the most fabulous thing like that. Someone told me the other day is that it's good in everything, but the vitamin B12 it has, it actually is unabsorbed by the body, and it absorbed any B12 that is there. Because I was surprised. I'm taking that, and then you go to the doctor, say you have a B12 deficiency. And I'm thinking, what do you mean? Then I find out. And this is something that they've been saying is the most fabulous thing for the last 50 years. So that's the thing. With time, they figure out that, that's the problem with the modern thing, is that you say it's fabulous, and then they find out it's not, and then you find out it is, and then you find out it's not. And then you find, if anybody says, this is great, someone's trying to prove it's not great. And what's not great, someone's trying to prove it is great. So that's what you see. Every 6 months, something that was, you shouldn't eat now, is the most fabulous thing. Don't eat any fat, don't eat any oils, that it'll make you fat, and this and that, like this and that. Now they said, no, you just eat that, and then you won't get fat. Just by eating only rich things, you won't get fat. Mm-hmm. High protein, high, cheese, all these kind of, you won't get fat. So, it's just, how do you work this out? You understand? So, we'll come up with the things like this. But the point is that those guys on the roof, some of them are 50, 60 years old. They're up on the roof. You bring me a Westerner that can go up there and do that. You look at them. Somebody, they all have gray hair. Like that. You look at them, you'll think the guy's maybe 30 or 40, but the guy's 50, 60. And that's from eating that fat rice, that. But what's the secret? Is he eats the same thing every day, day and day. So regulation has more to do with health than what you're eating. Now, the important thing is when you boil that rice, you cook extra rice. Then that rice, after you finish, then you just put that in a pot and pour cold water on. You just water on it and let it sit. The next morning, that's what you have for breakfast. Right? You put your little salt, you eat it with your green chili. Green chili is full of vitamin C. And haribo, you're good. You calculate how much that'll cost you.
No thanks.
Yes, so that's what I'm saying is, we're saying, I have to live like this. But the point is we might be able to live at something else. So I've given an extreme. You can find something in between. But my point is, I want to live here. It's close. But somebody else, some of these boys, they live up, halfway to Gaudiya Mutt there. And, they have places in the back that are, hardly cost you anything. You know what I'm saying? That's the thing is you have all these different things that you can figure out what's the cheapest. But Prabhupada had a servant. They don't get so much, but he was really big and strong. So you ask him, what do you eat? Like that. Because the other servants aren't big and strong. He says he eats corn. So he doesn't eat rice. He just eats corn. So that way he was strong and all that.
Maybe he was American?
Yeah. like that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing is that Krishna's taking care. You're not starving like that. There may be days where you think you are, but you're not. But then some of these celebrities that you see on front pages, they are starving.
They need pills for sleeping, most of them.
Yeah, like that, they got to stick a celery for lunch. But that's it, So Krishna takes care. It may not be how we would like it, but that's what we're saying. But if we develop that devotional consciousness, then however he takes care, we're happy. That's the whole point. That's what we're meaning. So the two aren't two different things. They're one thing. They may be taking two aspects of it. Well, we're talking about just the general happiness, or we're talking about what is the environment in which we think by getting that we would be happy. So Krishna's showing us it's the Krishna consciousness that makes us happy. It's not gaining the environment we want. Not that he doesn't necessarily give the environments we want. But the point is by giving them, will we become more Krishna conscious? If by giving them we won't, then he won't. So therefore, focus more on the Krishna consciousness, do your duties, and then whatever comes, then that's what you have. Because you can't get upset because you've already done the duty and this is what you got, so you can't complain because that's what it is. You know, you go out and buy a kilo of potatoes, you bring them home, or let's say you go buy a kilo of eggplant, you bring them home. Sometimes you get a whole kilo of eggplant. Sometimes the bugs have eaten half of it, so you only get half a kilo of eggplant. But it was, you paid for 1 kilo of eggplant, so you did your work and that's what you got. So, depending on the blessings of the bug demigods, then you get more or less. But the bug demigods are controlled by Krishna. Does that make sense? So then, yes. Okay.
So I'll think about it.
Okay. Yeah, think about it. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the supreme absolute truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the absolute truth. Krishna is the absolute truth. Relative truth is not truth in all the three phases of eternal time, right? So we say it's relative truth, because in all three, we say now it's the fact, but in the past it wasn't the fact, and in the future it won't be the fact. So only long as it's the contemporary thing, then we see that it's called the fact, but after some time it's not the fact anymore. That's why we say it's relative. You know, you can say, no, but it is a fact, it is this right now, but after some time will it still be fact? And because of that, therefore, can we take that as the basis of making a decision that's supposed to be made on the eternal platform? What's good for the soul is eternal. But if we try to base that on temporary facts, will that actually work? Right? Yes?
All right, so we know that the Shruti is eternal. But
yes.
What about the Smriti?
Yes, it's also. It's just that as it appears to, you know, Brahma spoke the Vedas, you know, they came out of his different mouths, so we can say, oh, but it began at this time, but it's always there. That's apurusheya. It means it was unspoken. It's just it manifests again. Mm-hmm. But the smriti is called because then it is your tradition. It's those who know shruti, how they apply it and practice it and understand it. So their discussions amongst themselves, that's what makes the smriti. Does that make sense? You know, as what Shukadeva Goswami understands, he explains it to Pariket Maharaj, that becomes the Bhagavatam. So the Puranas are like that. All your different Shastras are like Narada Pancharatra. That's Lord Shiva discussing, this transcendental worship with Narada Muni. So then that's Smriti. But it's all based on the Veda. So everything you can take back to something in the Veda. That's why you see here, like in Vedanta Sutra, always goes back to the Veda. So all of our philosophical points are in the Upanishads. So that means it's all Veda. Understanding those, that's been given out and documented, you know, in a logical way in the Vedanta Sutra. But it always goes back to specific Vedic verses. And then you see Bhagavad Gita is then the essence again. It's not giving the verses themselves, but it's based on that, so it's actually a support of that. So if you wanted to, you could go and then find all the Upanishadic verses that support the Bhagavad Gita verses. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it always goes back. So all smriti should be supporting shruti. So that means all smriti actually has the philosophical conclusions that are given in the Upanishads. Someone might say, no, but what about the brahmanas? It's just about the ritualistic performance. But the brahmanas are just how you apply the samhita in the ritualistic form. But the philosophy of that verse is in the Upanishads. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is then giving that. So someone who knows any of these, actually still the philosophy maintains. Now, if the philosophy is important, that's called Uttara Mimamsa. If the philosophy is not important, it's called Purva Mimamsa. If the ritual and the results are what's important, in other words, the temporary truth, then that's Purva Mimamsa. If you're looking about the real or the eternal truth, that's Uttara Mimamsa. So that means all the Vedic literatures can all be understood in connection with that philosophy. Right? So they can all prove the absolute truth. just mostly people don't do that. You know, how many people want to take Ayurveda and show how it means the Supreme Lord, how all the different aspects, how everything that functions is by the potency of the Supreme Lord. You know, people aren't interested. They want to know how can they improve their health, or how to make money, or how to, you know, something like that. But it actually, you can explain all the philosophical points of the Veda through Ayurveda, like that. So take anything, you know, you take the astrology, you take any of these things, the Vastu, you take the, any of these can explain. But it's just that we generally don't. But that's the meaning of the Aparavidya, is that it is a medium through which all those same points are made. But it's called Apara because we tend to look at the secondary. Well, in the spiritual world, they'll only see anything in connection with Krishna. So therefore, we don't really distinguish between primary and secondary. We don't distinguish that Mother Jashoda's cooking is different from her mood of love of Krishna. We take it as one thing. But her love for Krishna is the primary. The secondary manifestation is her cooking. But that's how she expresses her love. Like that. So there you just take it as devotion. You don't make the distinction. So in the material world, we make the distinction because people here make the distinction. Right? They see all these different things as separate from Krishna. So if someone wants, then it's Yukta Vairagya, and if it's not, how is that devotional service? Right? It's like, I use everything in Krishna's service, but this leading person, he has this facility. How is that devotional service? But you just said Yukta Vairagya. Why can't they Yukta Vairagya? You know, like that. So that's the whole, it's not, we choose when we want to see primary, when we want to see secondary. Well, in the spiritual world, they only see primary and secondary in relationship to that. Well, here we can see secondary on its own without Krishna. And then we might add Krishna. So that's what this verse is pointing out, is that all these things that we might see as the secondary, actually Krishna is the basis of it. So the creation, the maintenance, the destruction, you know, all different aspects of truth and knowledge and all these different things. Always the different things. Ingredients of creation, the internal force, your instructions, beginning of all truth, like that. So, you know, the practice. So it's all about Krishna. So they're showing how the primary is the real thing. So that's then the prayojana aspect. Understand? So, yeah? Yes.
The term Prasthan tribe is being accepted by all the followers of the Vedic system, or it's just establishing the Vedic authority?
That it's there. Some only accept Shruti. It's not very many. But generally, most everybody accepts those. But that's more if you're interested in the higher aspects of philosophy. But that's what's there. So Prasthan Traya means it's the philosophy of the Vedas. So the authority of that then is Upanishads, is the Vedanta Sutra and Bhagavad Gita. So you can say is it's like that, then you get everything. So then basing your philosophy on that, then you get. So you can say, specifically it would be for us, anybody who's a follower of Vedanta. So the six schools of Vedanta philosophy, for them that would be your main, because they'll accept all of these. But you do have some smartas that they don't accept Bhagavad Gita. Like that. But it's rare. I mean, how many people work on, you know, how many know the Jaimini Sutras and therefore they do everything according to those sutras? It'll be rare to find such people. Like that.
And you say about that the Shrutis are eternal. So even the Smritis, that past tense written documented in the Smritis, they sometimes differ from one kalpa to another.
Yeah.
So in that sense, like, how do you understand
that they're eternal?
Mm-hmm.
But it's talking about the same things that happen over and over again.
The slight different.
Yeah, it means that demigods carry the mountain goes from wherever it's situated, Mandara, to the milk ocean. Now, whether the demigods carry it and get crushed, whether Garuda carries it after they've gotten crushed, whether he carries it first and they don't get crushed, the main point is the mountain went to the milk ocean. Right? And then they churn. That's all. That makes sense. You know whether they, you know, immediately went and snatched the nectar, or they had to chase Janvantari a few times around the mountain before they snatched it. That's not the important point. Point is, nectar is snatched. Right? And then Mohinimurti comes and works things out. Does that make sense? So that's not the big deal. The principle is the thing. And so this is the variety. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Because here in the Vedas, they'll generally just say how much is necessary. That's all that's discussed. So for the particular audience, the particular question, then only so much of a particular story is told. Right? So it's not necessarily very often that the whole story, all details are told. One is it makes it so anytime you discuss, there's more variety. Because you bring out only that part. If every time you say the whole story, then the story gets old. So they don't do that. So they'll just tell how much of the story is necessary for that particular position. Does that make sense? Then in this way you may see, so it may be one story, just different aspects, but we think it's different stories. Or it's different kalpas. So all the Puranas will have all the main stories. Whether they're from the same kalpa or not, that's another thing. Like that. And then some will give some detail here, some detail there. That's why before it was by studying all the Shastras, then you had all the knowledge. But nowadays, then you study, you know, a particular book, and then from that, then you understand and approach everything else. Is that,
yes. Maharaj, before you were talking about that people sometimes they go to accept the philosophy of the non-existence.
Yes.
But sometimes because sometimes you associate with people like from Muslim background or Jewish background, it is like they are a group of people who are deprived from accepting the existence of God in any form. Because sometimes when you debate with them, you can't give any form, absolutely. So it's not that the nature of the vast majority of people is that they perceive and conceive God in the unconceivable form, and nothing that could emanate from the brain, from the human mind. It's not that a nature, it's normal that in their nature is that God is an unconceivable and somehow or other is like non-existence in our conception. It's not that their natural tendency is to accept that philosophy. So we have grown in such a way that we know we want that the source and origin of all forms is full form. In fact, he is the only real form and others are like illusion. It's like he's the only male, Radharani is the only female as the origin, but there are some kind of people, if you talk about God, they want to put him in such a platform that he is nothing conceivable.
But then that's the point, is then you deal on that point. You talk about that Brahman and Paramatma level, because they'll accept that level, because these are mentalities you only find in the material world. It's not that Brahman and Paramatma are material, but only people here think like that. In the spiritual world, they only deal with Bhagavan.
Yeah, but it's not a natural tendency of these kind of people to accept it in this way.
But no, but the point is, if you talk about the Supreme and how he's the witness, he's the judge, he's the controller, he's the lawmaker, you don't have any problem at all. Because that's all the farther they do. So the point is they should be God conscious. The difficulty is how God conscious are they?
Is it that we learn from the acharyas or that because there is envy? For example, the Mayavadas, I think Prabhupada somewhere said, or some readings I came to, is that because they are still have envy in the self, so they are Mayavadas. They are not clean enough.
That's there, but all living entities in the material world are envious. That's why they're here. They all are envious of God. It's just to what degree today, because tomorrow it'll be different. You know, that's why they're moving through samsara. So sometimes they're big demigods, you know, that know about the Lord, and other times they're a rock who doesn't even know they exist. You know? So, like that, it's always moving. So, the point is that you're trying to inspire someone that developing that love for the Lord is a principle, so everything should be done for the satisfaction of the Lord, and that all the Abrahamic will accept. That's a platform you can always discuss from. There's not a problem there. You know, you don't have to get into details because, as you said, they don't get into details. So why even bring it up? It's just the main thing is that, you know, are they looking at that or are they looking at secondary? Oh, because they're a Muslim or they're a Christian or a Jew, therefore that's the problem. No, point is it's you're supposed to be God conscious. That's the good part. Now, if you do it by different things in different places. You know, because even if they say, no, well, you have to accept Jesus, so is that, you know, according to the East Orthodox or the West Orthodox? You know, is that according to, you know, West, or is that according to Protestant, or what about the Oriental Orthodox? You know, you have all these different things like that, and then within each one, then there's so many differences. So, the point is that even they themselves in their own area, then they get into different things. You know what I'm saying? Like the Christians down that live in the monastery in the Sinai, right? There's a good chance they're not making and drinking champagne. But the monks that live in the monasteries in France, they are. So how is that? Because the different area, the different things, the different language, the different what's important. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, let's say, if you had a French scholar and a German scholar, right? The German scholar would appreciate the exactness of the logical presentation of something. The French scholar would appreciate the poetics of it and how nicely that's put together and how descriptive it is. They're both scholars. So that's what makes the difference between these different religions. But the point is that the central is developing love for the Lord. So that's the point you talk on. So once they come to appreciate that, then they can improve their God consciousness. So you don't have to deal with you know, that Krishna's blue when he's in Vrindavan with his girlfriend and playing the flute. You don't have to get into that because that will just, you know, that's way beyond digestible.
Maharaj, you also spoke about the temporal truth and the absolute truth, supreme truth and temporal truth. For example, the Dalai Lama, when we had the chance to meet him like 15 years ago, he said that they are expecting the arrival of Maitreya Muni, where the first thing he will do is to declare obsolete all the teachings of Sakyamuni Buddha. So is it, this fits within the temporal, because then I said, why, how is it possible? You are following so many, from thousands of years, the teachings of Sakyamuni Buddha. He says, not all this will be declared obsolete because of a different period, and we have to start following teachings of a new period. So this fits here in the temporal. It means whatever truth they have is not to be accepted as supreme truth. It's just a temporal.
So yeah, because it's anything means anything that's dealing with karma and jnana is temporary. And so theirs is focusing on the jnana aspect. And so then it's temporary. But so therefore, that's the key, is that if you want to preach the Buddhists, you know, give them the fourth canto, because that already has Maitreya Muni's instructions in it. Like that. Tell them, no, he's already arrived. Says, you guys were looking the wrong way or something. You know?
They're making a big statue for him in Kuchinagar, 555 feet.
Maitreya.
Yeah, they are making in Kuchinagar the tallest Buddha statue in the world, but it's for Maitreya Muni in Kuchinagar, 555 feet, and I always get emails asking for support and the design and all these things. So, and then when Lord Maitreya appears somewhere, they suppose that he appeared already in Nepal, but he's disappeared somewhere. So when he starts his preaching, so they want to welcome him with that super great statue, and then the new Buddhist philosophy will start.
We're already following that new Buddhist philosophy. Okay. So it's how you say that new Buddhist philosophy was spoken, how you say, 5,000 years ago to Vidura. Yeah, so. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time. in the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. Right? So anything that's truth here is because it's connected to him. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within this material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there is any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. Right? So therefore, we can also say, if there is any potatoes in this world, then Krishna is the source of those potatoes. So all he is the source of all relative truths. Because all these truths now, they'll have a beginning, middle, and end. But that aspect of Krishna, that's not. It won't have. That'll always be there. Devotees, therefore, following the footsteps of Lord Brahma, pray, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami, worshipping the Adi Purusha, the Supreme Truth, Govinda. Everything, everywhere is performed in terms of three principles. Jnana, Bala, Kriya. Knowledge, strength, and activity. In every field, In every field, if there is not full knowledge, full strength, and full activity, an endeavor is never successful. Therefore, if one wants success in everything, one must be backed by these three principles. Right? So then, Jnana, Bala, and Kriya. Because that's what the Lord is in control of, right? So in Sankarsana, Sankarsana aspect, you have the jnana and bala. And then that has to be applied, right? So that's your kriya. Then you get results. Right? Without those, then if you don't have the proper strength to do something, if you don't have the proper knowledge and make the proper endeavor, you don't get the result. So these three things have to be there. Does that make sense?
Kriya would be
activity. No, it just means that you have to have all these things, and when they're applied, then you go. Because the Krishna, Balaram is in control of the jnana and kriya shaktis, right? It means he expands as Vasudev to take care of jnana, but it's still coming from him. So as Sankarsan, then his energies is jnana and bala. Remember the six. What are they called? Yes. So, like that. But then we also see Kriya Shakti, that's his. So in the Jnana, then you have this knowledge and the strength, right? Because you have to have the identity and the basis. But then you have to apply it. And then you'll be successful. You get your result, your Prayojana. But the point is, it's as previously mentioned, if you don't see Krishna in it, then what you're going to get is temporary. So if I apply this jnana, bala, and kriya without Krishna consciousness, I'm only going to get a temporary result. I apply this with Krishna consciousness, then I get a permanent result. Permanent means I get the devotional benefit. It's not that what I do, I bake the cake, and then like Draupadi's, plate, then it lasts forever. What's that? Yeah.
Maharaj, sorry if I ask one question. One devotee in Bombay was given a lecture from the absolute perspective, the present doesn't exist. He said, for example, this is 434.
Because Krishna is the past, he's the present, and the future. So if he's all three, means it must exist, since it's Krishna. So to say the present doesn't exist, then which impersonal school are they speaking from? Because it's not Vaishnava.
No, it's a devotee from here.
That doesn't matter.
No, I will explain what he said. He says it's now 4:44, for example. After 1 minute, it's not anymore. So it's part of the past.
But it's part of the past, because that's what past is. But the present is what's always going on now. But you're saying 4:44, but it's not that 4:44 is the present. It happens to be in the present, but then it's in the past. But before that, it was in the future. The present is what's going on right now. That's those who understand that and can function in that. That's the mode of goodness. Goodness is in the present. Passion is in the future. Ignorance is in the past.
it works like this.
Yeah.
So that's how it works. Goodness is the present.
Yes. So therefore, that's why you follow with knowledge the recommendation activity in the present with full consciousness, knowing what your results are and having this knowledge and strength. Then that endeavor will get you a result. But if you don't do that, you don't get any result. Otherwise, why do so many people know the same knowledge? Some people get results, some people don't. Because people are not acting in the present. They're not applying it properly. So that's the thing that's not taught in the success things. That's what makes it work. But unless you cultivate goodness, how do you function in the present? People are saying, oh, we're just being practical. But are you getting anything? They're saying practical, but what have they got? They're being practical. What do they have? You go to their house, what's so special? You know? Nothing. So what's this so practical? You know? So it's not that good. So the point is the present is what's going on now. So you have to be able to appreciate and understand that. So they can't understand that means there's too much passion or ignorance. Otherwise, why don't they understand the present? Why would they use an example? Why would they say a point, a time, 4:44 is, you know, but point is it's in the future. In the morning, it's in the future. You know, in the afternoon, it's the present. In the evening, it's in the past.
Is not seen from the illusory form of the time that in fact time doesn't.
That's a whole different discussion. You want to see the point is here is past, present, future. In the spiritual world, it's only present. There is no past or future because everything's eternal. So how can there be a past or a future? And so if the point is if they're attached to bending their brain around this, then good luck bending. They'll never understand it. Because it's something that Scripture explains, and then you understand it. It's revealed. It's not through your intelligence you can understand. Why would you say, when Prabhupada talks about the present and how Krishna is these things, why would you say it doesn't exist? Why would any devotee do that? The Scripture says, Prabhupada says, why you have to be unique? He means it's a matter of trying to be unique. You don't understand it, so therefore it can't be real. Since when is our false ego and our opinion of any value? So why would you do this? In other words, there's things you don't do. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing, is that you can say it's no, but it's truth, it's knowledge, or it's interesting. Yes, but it doesn't mean that that's stuff you talk about. You know what I'm saying? You know, has anybody done a study? Is okay, when you use a guillotine, when they cut off the head, how far does the blood spurt? You know, at what difference? Does it go in just a radius? Does it go in a particular? What angle is it at? And what velocity does it come out in? And you know, the radius also, you know, up and down, you know, sideways, all these different things like that. And that doesn't matter if the guy's shorter or taller or fatter or skinnier or, you know, whether, what background they are and that, you know, does a businessman's head, you know, does that blood go different than if someone was just like a carpenter? And you get, you know, but what's the point? So that's the whole thing is, why would you get into this as a discussion? Prabhupada says this the way it is. Why would you bring it up? Unless it's, you're bringing it up that you've heard doubts and you're trying to clear those doubts. But if you're only creating more doubts, we've got 7 billion on the planet, people on the planet already doing this. We don't need one more person doing this. So, and we don't definitely need them giving a class. You know what I'm saying? So it has to be, there's an etiquette of what you discuss and what you don't. And that's not dogma, it's etiquette. We can discuss that, just like we just discussed what time. But the point is they're not actually discussing it, because they're discussing it from the mundane platform. It's actually non-existent. So yes, in their concept, then present doesn't exist. But also, according to what they've said, past and future doesn't exist either. Because, you know, if 4:44 is in the afternoon, it's there's no past. And then once it comes and goes into the past, and now it's 5 o'clock, then there's no future. So we could just go on and on, you know. It's like, you know, I touch, uncleanliness goes from touch, and I ate, and then by accident I touched the ground. That means the whole ground is impure. That means the building and that goes out, and the whole planet's impure. And then it's held in its position by, you know, Anantasation, and Anantasation is connected down to Lord Vishnu, and he's sitting on it. And then, you know, we've contaminated like this, and then the airs that are moving that, the whole universe, and then that's just within the Brahmananda, and then Mahavishnu, and just like, oh my God, we don't need that. It's absolutely not necessary. Right down. So that people do this as a need, their own personal need, keep it to yourself, you know. When you're in your room alone, go crazy. But when you come out of the room, then behave like the acharyas recommend. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole thing.
Maybe he was giving a lecture to students.
But it doesn't matter. You don't you don't break our philosophy just because
of
students.
I don't know why he did it. I'm going to interact with him about that.
Yeah, the point is you don't do that. It's already established here. That is Krishna. Why would he say?
Those pairs are called Kalyana Guru.
Hmm? Kalyana Guru, yes. Okay. So therefore, Kriya means then you have to have Jnana and Bala. Then when you apply it, you'll get something. Right, but then also, as then you know, we see in detail. Then you have the proper attitude, which will be your what do you call it? Aishwarya and Virya. Right, you have to have facilities. You have to have the right attitude. You know, you have to have that the proper that confidence there, and then your Shakti and Shakti. Oh my God,
it's a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. Shakti. They're both terms like that, Shakti and Tejas. Shakti and Tejas. So then you know what it is that you're going towards, how it's connections. So the point is that when we see it that Krishna is the Lord of his energies, then it works out devotionally. If we see that we're the Lord of the energies, we're the controller and enjoyer of the energies, then you get a mundane result. So only if you're Krishna conscious, then you actually understand that Krishna is the controller of the Shakti. Right? Because otherwise, the Tejas, I have the Tejas, I enjoy Shakti. So that's the material. Spiritual is Krishna. It's everything comes from him. He's the enjoyer of his energies. That's why when we talk about Krishna, we talk about how he's the enjoyer. He's the original. He's the source of all energies. He's Rasa. He's the enjoyer of those energies. So we see him on all these levels. Then it works. Then when you perform the Kriya, then you'll get the full benefit. But the basic is, Jnana includes the proper knowledge of all these. So you can say, is that because it's not that you don't have the Prayojana until you have it. So it's that. So you have to have the knowledge of what is the Prayojana, what is the endeavor, what is the attitude, and what is the proper, you know, knowledge itself that you need. Then making that, and Bala, you have that ability. You have the guna and karma for it. Then applying that guna and karma to this jnana properly, then you can get the prayojana. Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.